Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Wednesday, October 18th, 2017. I am Jason Powell, and coming up after this brief break for non-members, my interview with Ring of Honor wrestler Rhett Titus. Okay, everybody, I am here with Rhett Titus. He is promoting the Ring of Honor television taping that's coming up on Friday in Philadelphia at the 2300 Arena. Rhett, we'll just start with an easy one. 2300 Arena, the old ECW Arena. Special meaning to you, or were you a fan of ECW back in the day?
Oh, hell yeah, it's special meaning to me. Now, that's a building I wrestled in, you know, countless times through the years of Ring of Honor and other independent companies. But I remember going to my very first show at the ECW Arena. I was actually 6 years old, and it was in 1994. It was originally supposed to be Shane Douglas and Stunning Steve Austin versus Too Cold Scorpio and Ron Simmons. But the night before on ECW TV, they said Steve Austin wouldn't be there. And I remember showing up to the show, and they had somebody come in under a black blanket, a black carpet. And Sherry Martel walked him into the building, and everybody's like, oh, my gosh, who do you think it is? Who do you think it is? And they do a promo at the beginning of the show, and they're like, we may not have the Hollywood blonde Steve Austin, but that doesn't mean we don't have a Hollywood blonde. They took the blanket off, and it was Brian Pillman underneath, and you know, they came back later for the main event. It was awesome, you know, and that started my ECW fandom, you know, real big right there, you know. And I had seen Sabu that night, and that was the first time I ever seen him in person.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, he was just something totally different in 1994, crazier than anything you'd ever see on WAF or WCW TV at that time, you know.
Whatever happened to that Austin guy? Was that just the last time he was heard of? Was when he no-showed that appearance?
Yeah, Stunning Steve Austin, his career took a big dive after that.
Well, I want to go all the way back to when you started training. I know you were initially trained by Austin Aries, later by Daniel Bryan. Tell me about those experiences.
You know, it was great. You know, Aries, man, he taught me so much. You know, you got to remember, when I started training, I was 17 years old, so I didn't have a whole lot of life experience or anything like that. And, you know, Austin Aries was able to teach me a lot about life and just, you know, becoming a man and that sort of stuff. Never mind all the wrestling and, you know, all that stuff. And then it was great because later on, when I got to be managed by Austin Aries and six-man tag with him and tag team up with him, it was like a second part of training, which was really cool. And, you know, I'll never forget one day training with Austin Aries. I believe it was the second day of training. He was like, hey, so you guys want to learn pile drivers today? I was like, yeah, sure. You know, I didn't know any better. He's like, come over here. And he put my head between my legs, and he farted right on my head. He's like, stupid, you're not going to learn a pile driver on the second day? And I was like, oh, well, okay. I didn't really know how the training criteria worked. And he's like, all right, but really, you want to learn how to take a pile driver? I was like, yeah, sure, you know. And then he farted on my head again. He's like, what did I just tell you? He's like, you got to learn to listen. I was like, oh, well, okay. And later on, we eventually learned pile drivers, you know, when the time was right. But that was day two of training right there with Austin Aries. But and then Daniel Bryan, he was very strict. Aries was more of a laid-back trainer. Bryan was very strict. And I remember I was always coming from work to get to training, and it would always, like, you know, if I, like, missed one red light or, you know, ran into a little bit of traffic, I would always wind up being late. He always started at, like, 5 o'clock sharp, and I lived about an hour and a half away, so, you know, getting out of work early wasn't really always the easiest. But I remember I showed up at like 4:59. I rolled up to the school. I had my boots on already, so I was ready to go. So I ran right into the school, and I got in at like 5:54 or something stupid like that, you know, just in time. I was like, oh, thank God. And he's like, oh, you made it on time today. I'm like, yes, sir. And so we start training. We start warming up. And if I was ever late, I always had to do extra everything, you know, extra like squats, extra push-ups, you know, extra running the ropes, all that good stuff. But so we started our warm-up, and then he's like, who brought mud into my ring? And I was just like, oh, no, oh, no. And, like, everybody looked at the bottom of their boots, and then I looked at mine, and I had mud on the bottom of my boots, and, of course, it was me. So,
oh, man.
I had to wind up doing the extra squats, extra push-ups, and extra running the ropes and all the extra stuff anyway, so I might as well just have been late.
Well, it's funny that Aries was the one laid back, and Brian was kind of the hard-ass, because you just, considering their public personas, you might expect the opposite.
Yeah, you might. I mean, you know, obviously Aries commanded respect and all that stuff, but, you know, if we were a few minutes late, it wasn't like the end of the world, you know. But Brian was very, and, you know, Aries had a different philosophy too, which I really dug, was, you know, I'm not here to be your personal trainer, I'm here to be your wrestling trainer, so you guys better show up in shape and be ready to go. If not, you know, you can, you know, hurt yourself or that sort of thing. So he had, like, you know, a lot of beliefs. And Brian, on the other hand, was like, well, no, we're going to do a lot of squats, we're going to do a lot of push-ups, we're when you're already working out earlier that day, and then you have to go and work out again, and it's like, oh, gosh. But, you know, it's all just part of, you know, making yourself tougher, you know, and whatever gets thrown in front of you, you being able to handle it. And, you know, whatever obstacles professional wrestling has thrown in front of me over the years, you know, I've taken them all in stride because, you know, lessons that I learned back at the dojo.
Well, Daniel wrote in his book that he doesn't consider himself to be a good trainer. I mean, is that something you would agree with, or is he just being a little too hard on himself?
He's being a little hard on himself. I remember reading that and thinking, wow, I never thought of that. You know, I never thought that way about Daniel Bryan. I always thought he was a great trainer. And a lot of stuff that he told me back then, I still instill now. And I remember he was, like, the first person to, like, teach me the cording hold, and I always thought that was really cool. But his training was a lot more technical, whereas, like, you know, Aries, we learned the basic stuff, and then Brian, we kind of learned different holds and different ways to get into the holds and different ways to get out of the holds. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that, you know, you would see Daniel Bryan doing in the ring, you know, he'd be teaching there. And I always find that statement kind of weird, that he lacked being able to motivate his trainees, but I sure thought he motivated me.
Yeah. And so, okay, you train at the ROH school, and I know you've done a lot of indies, but you've primarily been an ROH guy over the years. When Kenny King, your longtime partner, ended up leaving Ring of Honor, I think the deal was you still had time left on your contract. At that point, though, were you wishing you could join him, or were you just committed to ROH?
I've always bled ROH because, you know, I'll never forget going to the first ROH show at the Murphy Rec Center back in 2002. The Era of Honor begins, and I was diehard Ring of Honor from that point on. Always loved it. And at that time, like, a lot of weird stuff, like, just happened to happen. Like, we had done a shoot interview with High Spots, like, 2 or 3 months beforehand. And, you know, Kenny said some questionable things in it. And, you know, whenever Kenny would say something, I would, like, kind of try to, like, you know, the good cop, bad cop touching, I would try to, like, turn it into a positive, just because that's how I am. And, you know, I know that we are representing the company and stuff still. And, you know, and then all of a sudden that happens with Kenny. And then the day after, they release a trailer of the shoot interview, and Kenny's just, like, pretty much, like, burying the company. And like, I'm sitting there next to him, and I remember just like being in the wrong, it was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah.
Never mind the fact that they had, you know, all these plans and ideas for me and Kenny together. And all of a sudden, Kenny's gone, and, you know, the tag titles are gone, and, you know, now I'm here on my own, and there wasn't any plans for me on my own. So I remember being frustrated at the time, but just kind of going along with everything and just trying to, you know, keep everything going to the best of my ability. I didn't want to leave. You know, I just wish things would have worked out better at that point in time, because, you know, I love Ring of Honor, and you know, for a while there, Kenny was just kind of treading water at TNA anyway, so it's not like I was like, hey, let me go try to capsize myself with you over there. But, you know, I was, it was just a wrong place, wrong time, and, you know, it was a tough situation.
Well, tell me about the Romantic Touch character. And it seemed like you guys were really at your peak with All Night Express when he ended up leaving. And so it was kind of odd that we didn't see much of Rhett Titus. We ended up seeing more of Romantic Touch.
Yeah, basically, I had joined Scum, and we were trying to, you know, bring down Ring of Honor with Steve Corino and Kevin Steen and Jimmy Jacobs, Matt Hardy, and Cliff Compton. And then, you know, we lost this big cage match, and we had to disband. And then we actually, you know, everybody was actually technically fired from Ring of Honor at the time, and everybody kind of found their way back in, except for Rhett Titus. And, you know, it was a few years before you've seen Rhett Titus again. And in the meantime, this Romantic Touch guy just happened to show up out of nowhere. And a lot of people would say that, you know, he resembles me. I personally don't see the resemblance. You know, I always get that a lot, you know, Rhett Titus, Romantic Touch, Rhett Titus. Even went as far as 1 year in the PWI 500 where Rhett Titus was not listed and Romantic Touch was. And I was like, what the hell? I looked at the back and it said name change. I was like, man, you know, they've taken this a little too far. But, you know, the Romantic Touch still pops up here and there in Ring of Honor, like around Valentine's Day he came back. You know, I mean, I kind of find his character fun and enjoy it, but I just don't like, you know, people pinholing it and say, oh, that's you. You know, I feel like every time, you know, I go out to the ring, people are like, oh, bring back the Romantic Touch. I'm like, man, yeah. I've been here for 12 years, you know?
Exactly.
It can be frustrating at times.
Well, you guys ended up putting the All Night Express back together when Kenny did return. And I thought it was well received to begin with. And then it just seemed like you guys lost momentum and it really didn't feel like a creative priority. I mean, the act clicked the first time around. What was different the second time?
You know, I still struggle to try to figure that out. The only thing that I can kind of pinpoint my finger on was at Final Battle in Philly when we beat the Young Bucks and the Briscoes in the three-way for the number one contendership. And, you know, we were just always hated in Philly. Like, no matter what, like, you know, Rhett Titus, Kenny King, All Night Express, we were always hated in Philly. And it was kind of like supposed to be our big moment on, you know, opening the pay-per-view and that sort of thing and beating the Young Bucks and the Briscoes. And, you know, it just, it was very heavily booed, you know, and we were kind of supposed to be baby faces. And, you know, that kind of took us in a different route from that point on. And, you know, we weren't really the baby faces that people had always seen us to be. And, another thing that kind of happened all at the same time, like I think like that week or the week before, very close to Final Battle, Jim Cornette put out that, you know, his MLW podcast where, you know, he had like a 30-minute rant on Kenny King and just explaining the whole Kenny King leaving. And, you know, he had a lot of choice words to say for Kenny King, and Kenny never was able to really defend himself for it, you know? So if you only hear one side of the story, you automatically tend to believe that side of the story. So a lot of people were just, like, kind of crapping on Kenny King at that moment, like, oh, well, this is what Jim Cornette said, and Jim Cornette's been around wrestling forever, so, you know, screw this guy. So, you know, there's always two sides to the story. You know, whatever happened between them, that's between them, you know. But I think that might have had a little something to do with it as well, because Kenny never really got to address it.
Gotcha. Were you optimistic about the Cabinet and Rebellion factions? To me, it just kind of felt like you guys should have been spotlighted, and instead they're putting together a couple of rather clunky factions that just didn't seem to click. They almost screamed undercard, unfortunately.
I was very optimistic about the Cabinet. Reason being that, you know, I was kind of pretty certain that Donald Trump would wind up winning the election, and everybody else, you know, didn't think that he had a chance. But then when a week before they kind of killed the Cabinet and turned it into the Rebellion with the idea that Donald Trump wasn't going to win, you know, and then he won the next week, and it's like, well, you know, if we would have kept this going, we still would have had a lot of heat. And it's weird these days because, you know, if you're trying to chase like heat like you were in like the 80s and the early 90s and that sort of thing, it doesn't really translate well to wrestling these days. You know, a lot of wrestling these days is focused on, you know, the people making the most money is the people who sell the most T-shirts and sell the most merch and that sort of stuff.
Sure.
Whereas, you know, back in the day, if you were a good heel who got heat and drew people to the building, you know, you would be making just as much money as the top baby faces. And in 2017 or 2016, it didn't really work that way. So, and, you know, it was kind of a little too, you know, a little too touchy for people as well. As, you know, people don't really like to mix their wrestling and politics together, even though it wasn't a political gimmick per se. It was just kind of like a takeoff of it and trying to, you know, cash in on the heat that Donald Trump has, you know. But it wasn't supporting Trump or anything like that, or even, you know, bashing Trump or anything, but it just kind of rubbed a lot of people the wrong way.
Okay, you mentioned it's, you know, the way the business is today compared to before when it comes to merch sales and things like that. And, I mean, there's no arguing when it comes to the success of the Young Bucks, Cody, the Bullet Club in general. But I've kind of observed, because they are fan-friendly but supposed to be heels, I think, in many cases, that it feels like it makes it difficult when they're in there with baby faces, on those baby faces. Is that something you've observed?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, at Final Battle, you know, just before when we were positioned to be the baby faces and that was supposed to be our big coming out party at Final Battle, making the big win, you know, and the whole crowd is, you know, booing you, and it's because, you know, they're cheering the Young Bucks, you know, it's kind of hard. And, you know, you can't, no matter what actions they do or what they happen to say or how they act, you can't convince me that the Young Bucks are heels.
Right.
They're full-on baby faces. You know, it's kind of like how Steve Austin was in the 90s, where, you know, even though he didn't act like the traditional baby face, he was the traditional baby face. And the only way to really get, you know, the Young Bucks to turn heel would be to change their wrestling style, where they weren't doing any super kicks or any of their cool moves that the fans want to see.
And if they give all that up?
Yeah, if they completely like cut all that stuff out and just grab the chin lock or something for the whole match, you know, the place would be like, oh, man, these guys are so good, but, you know, they don't want to do any of that stuff for us. You know, screw these guys.
Pull a Mick Foley, basically.
But at the same time, you know, they wouldn't want to do that because, you know, they would lose a lot of money in merch sales.
Is it as simple as just turning them babyface?
I mean, I don't really think you have to, you know. I think that, you know, they're already there. You know, there's no,
yeah.
You know, it's just kind of who you position them against. You know, like, if there's a guy that you're really trying to push as a baby face, you may not want to put them in there against the Young Bucks in that sort of situation because, you know, it may not end up well for that person. And it may also affect their confidence as well, too, as a babyface. Like, oh, man, like, I went out there and got booed out the building, you know. And confidence is a lot of things to do with how a performer performs as well, because if your confidence is shot, you know, your work will certainly show that.
Well, now you formed the Dogs tag team with Will Ferraro.
That's right. Yeah, Willie.
Is this something that you guys wanted to do, or were you just kind of put together by creative and formed a tag team that way?
Well, Little Willie is one of my best friends in and out of wrestling, and we've done a lot of drives and a lot of training and a lot of gym sessions together. He was actually even in my wedding. And
Cool.
Yeah, and, about a year ago, I started making these videos. Like, we would always, like, me and him would always, like, come up with this creative stuff to do. Like, for instance, like, we made this, like, fake podcast, of a guy who works behind the scenes at Ring of Honor, me and Mark Davis. He's, like, in charge of production. So we made this fake podcast, and, you know, we would pretend to be him and just, you know, have a good time doing that. And then, like, we would always be doing this goofy stuff and just kind of, like, you know, just for ourselves and our friends, you know, around us. And then I started doing the YouTube videos every week just to try to create a buzz, because I don't think enough people really use social media to all of its ability, especially like these young guys who are just so used to social media and they grew up on it. Whereas, you know, when I got into wrestling, the only real thing going on at the time was MySpace. So, and you know, if you tried to shoot a video on your phone back then, it would be the worst quality, and it would take like 2 hours to upload.
Right.
It was just a whole big ordeal. But nowadays, you can shoot a video on your phone and have it up to, you know, all your Twitter followers, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, all within the matter of seconds. And guys don't use that enough to their ability. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to start doing these videos every week and try to not necessarily do wrestling promos, but promote my shows without doing the, I'm coming to Philadelphia on Friday night at the 2300 Arena, and just find a different way to get that point across without actually standing in front of a wall and just saying it, you know? So I started doing these videos, and Little Willie would wind up being in a lot of them because, you know, I'd be with him a lot, and I'd be like, oh, you know, hey, you know, be this guy in the video, be this guy in the video, you know? So he would just kind of be in there by chance, and, you know, a lot of the boys in the locker room were like, oh, man, this is really good stuff. You guys are really good together. And, you know, just our banter back and forth in real life, you know, because a lot of what you see in these videos or even on Ring of Honor TV is, you know, what what it's really like being us. You know, we don't have to put on a show when we're the Dogs because, you know, Big Dog and Little Willie is art imitating life, you know. And so we were putting these videos together, and we actually wound up getting booked on a tag team at an indie show. And Carrie Silkin just happened to be at the indie show visiting, and he was like, this is what you guys need to be doing in Ring of Honor. Like, you guys need to bring this to Ring of Honor. This is entertaining. And shortly after that, all the wheels lined up, and now we're the Dogs. So Big Dog and Little Willie, we're a new tag team in Ring of Honor. You know, we just had a big showcase match on pay-per-view against One Mean Team the other night at Global War Chicago. And we got to do commentary in Columbus, and we had a few other matches against Best Friends and Coast to Coast. And this weekend we wrestled the Roppongi 3K, a.k.a. the Tempura Boys, on Ring of Honor TV, who are currently the IWGP Junior Tag Team Champions. So we're being thrust into the spotlight quite quickly.
Well, very cool. And to close this out, why don't you tell people? You mentioned those videos and the things you're doing on social media. Go ahead and plug away. Tell people where they can find you.
Yeah, youtube.com/RhettTitus. Usually every Monday night at 7:50, there's a new video going up there. And then I'll throw some other videos up during the week, too, just to keep the people entertained, keep the people coming back. But usually Monday night at 7:50, it's always a constant. And you can follow me on Twitter, at RhettTitus, A-N-X, R-H-E-T-T-T-I-T-U-S, A-N-X. I would change my my handle, but I got so much like merch and stuff with my Twitter handle on there. And also, if you change your handle, you might lose your blue check. So it's like, do I change it? Do I not change it? Screw it. Just leave it.
Hey, better Twitter than a tattoo, right?
Yeah, right. And then also on Instagram at RhettTitusANX, Facebook.com/RhettTitus. You can like me over there. ProWrestlingTees.com/RhettTitusANX. If you want to get a t-shirt of RhettTitus or the dogs, you can find them there. But definitely YouTube.com/RhettTitus.
Well, very good. I really appreciate the time. And again, it's Friday night, Philadelphia, 2300 Arena, Ring of Honor television taping. Find more details available at the Ring of Honor website. Thank you again, Rhett. I hope to do this again sometime.
Thank you very much, Jason. I appreciate your time as well. The big dog is leaving the building, baby.